Chapter 2. Vision and Environment. In the end, commanders do only two things: provide the vision and set the environment. Almost everything you do for the organization falls into one of these categories. You will be tempted to focus elsewhere. If you do so, it is likely you are performing someone else's job, and they neither want nor need your help. Quote by Colonel Steve Goldfein, 1st Fighter Wing Commander. You are not hired to tread water in command. Rather, you are expected to move your squadron in a direction that more effectively accomplishes the unit's mission. This is true regardless of whether you are taking charge of a top-notch squadron or one that's on its back. Even the very best organizations can and will improve under the leadership of an inspirational commander. Developing a clear vision and then communicating that vision effectively are essential elements of successful command. Developing and communicating your vision. I am interested in the future because that's where I plan to spend the rest of my life. A quote by Major General Perry Smith, United States Air Force retired. Add 1 year from your change of command day and ask yourself where you want the squadron to be. What specific goals do you want the squadron to achieve? Take the time to put these thoughts down on paper. You will find this exercise to be extremely useful for organizing your thoughts into a coordinated plan and a focused effort. This list becomes the foundation of your commander's intent, your vision. How you intend to accomplish these goals is not critical at this point. The next step is to combine this list of goals into a basic vision statement. Remember that your airmen want, need, and deserve to be led from day one of your command tour. Knowing the direction their commander wants to take them is both comforting and reassuring. Here are some basic guidelines for developing your vision statement. Make it understandable. It must be understood by the entire squadron. Ensure that it is clear, concise, and easy to remember. Make it inclusive. Look over every aspect of your squadron and ensure that no section is left out of your vision. Make it supportive. Remember that your squadron is responsible for executing a portion of the wing's mission. Your vision must support the group and wing. And finally, encourage participation. Avoid the tendency to issue your vision. Allow senior supervisors to make comments and tweak the vision statement before it is published. Their buy-in will flow down through the unit and help it to take solid root. Here are two examples of vision statements to help you develop your own. When my brother, Colonel Steve Goldfein, stood up an AEF at Kwangju, he had airmen assigned from 10 different Pacific Air Force bases with people going in as many directions. To get everyone aligned, he developed the following 5-phrase program: reception and bed down, force security, C3, mission continuation, and leaving the place better than we find it. Do one before moving on to the next. Simple, understandable, and everyone understood their role. My predecessor in command, Lieutenant Colonel Guy Dalbeck, had done a marvelous job transforming the squadron from a relatively new unit into a showplace for the wing. I determined that my role was to build on his excellent work and focus on rapid mobility in keeping with the move to an expeditionary Air Force. Our vision became: arrive on time, with the right tools, the right training, and the right attitude to get the job done right the first time. Nickel standard. Again, catchy, inclusive, and easy to remember. A final thought on developing your vision. Do not wait until after you have taken the unit colors to accomplish this critical task. Think about it right now. Make out your list of goals. Talk it over with your peers. Use the time available between learning of your command assignment and taking command to think through this process. Like elected officials, you will experience a honeymoon period during which your troops will gauge you as their new leader. You must not squander the opportunity to lead from the beginning of your tour with a clear sense of direction and purpose. I will repeat the previous statement because it is so critical to successful command. Your troops want, need, and deserve to be led from day one of your command tour. Once you have developed your vision, you must then communicate it throughout the squadron. Take and make every opportunity to talk to your troops about your vision and their role in it. It should become the centerpiece of a mini-speech you give when meeting with members of the squadron. Repetition in the early months of your command is critical to ensuring that the word filters to all levels of the organization. When Ronald W. Reagan was president, he stuck to a few key themes throughout his 8 years in office. As he constantly repeated these ideas, we came to understand more clearly the direction he intended to lead our nation. On a slightly smaller scale, you must do the same as commander of your squadron. By taking the time to first develop and then communicate your vision to the squadron, you will begin your command tour with a clear sense of direction and purpose. The next step is to build the environment in the squadron to achieve your vision. Building the environment. Learn from the mistakes of others. You won't live long enough to make them all yourself. A quote by Martin Fanby. Every day, more than 95% of your airmen will arrive at work intending to succeed. Very few come in intending to fail. Your role as commander is to build an environment within the squadron with as few barriers as possible to achieving this already sought-after success. The work area must be secure, safe, of high standard, and respectful of diversity. The most challenging aspect of building this environment will be establishing open and engaged communication flow within the unit. As the commander, you set the tone for the entire squadron. Are you an active and engaged listener? Do you maintain eye contact when people are talking? Do you ask questions to clarify their positions? Do you encourage diversity of opinion on issues? Can you summarize a complex discussion into logical points at the end of a staff meeting? All of these are essential characteristics of an active listener. Not only must you set the example as the commander, you must mentor your key supervisors to do the same. After you have given direction in a staff meeting, wait a few days and then ask a few airmen if they have heard the guidance. You'll often be disappointed in what you find. Go back to the top and start again. It takes constant vigilance throughout your command tour to keep information and ideas flowing daily in all directions. In almost every case study presented in this paper, as well as virtually every mishap board you will ever be involved in, a breakdown in communication at some point is causal. Work at improving communication every day until you give up command. You can use, or develop if required, a few key organizations within your squadron to assist in facilitating communication flow. Four such key organizations are discussed below. 1. Flight Commander Forum. Most squadrons are organized such that every airman is assigned to one of your flight commanders. Establish a forum with just you and your subordinate commanders to discuss issues related to the squadron. Meet once a month and use the opportunity to share your thoughts as well as prepare them for future leadership responsibility. Number 2. Top 3 or 4. Meet with your senior NCOs within the first few days of taking command. Establish clearly that you intend to meet with them on a regular basis to discuss issues facing the squadron. Again, work to get their participation and recruit them to help communicate your vision and intent to the troops. 3. Airmen's Advisory Council. This is a superb forum for offering younger airmen the opportunity to raise issues directly with the commander as well as hear from you. Not only work to get their commitment to supporting your vision, also use the forum to check communication flow throughout the squadron. Did your direction at the last staff meeting make it out? Ask and see. 4. Spouse Support Group. Our families exhibit a special kind of courage when they endure the long hours, the separations, and the hardships so common to our service. We owe it to these unsung heroes to ensure they are informed about squadron activities and to make them feel part of the unit's mission. Share your vision with them. They deserve to know, and you want their involvement. Here is a story from Lieutenant Colonel Jeff Lofgren, commander of an F-16 fighter squadron, that highlights a lesson he shares about listening to key supervisors. The time and place, May 1999, Misawa Air Base, Japan. We had just returned from a deployment to the desert and were facing a Pacific Air Force inspection in 2 months. The orderly room had not deployed and was expected to have completed all inspection preparation while we were gone. This had not happened. I called a meeting to discuss orderly room issues and to review where we were in preparation for the upcoming inspection. At the end of the discussion, one of the staff sergeants brought up the fact that he was conducting ergo testing and requested to be allowed to return to work in the squadron in athletic gear since he was driving back and forth a great deal, 15 minutes each way. I asked the non-commissioned officer in charge of the orderly room his opinion. He was taken aback by the question, but responded that it would in fact help if the staff sergeant could come back to the squadron. I then asked if anyone had brought up the uniform attire as an issue. My first sergeant said the chief had commented on the fact that the staff sergeant had been in the squadron in workout attire. I did not listen very well at this point. My shirt said he had already spoken with the NCO in charge and resolved the issue. He was hinting big and I wasn't listening. I was running late, so I made a hasty decision I thought was no big deal and authorized the staff sergeant to wear athletic gear while accomplishing ergo testing. Big mistake. Later that afternoon, my shirt came into my office and shut the door. Being the ultimate professional, he asked, "May I speak frankly with you, sir? You really messed up this morning." Right then, all the subtle comments became clear. He proceeded to tell me that my chief had already resolved the issue by directing the shirt to instruct the non-commissioned officer in charge that the staff sergeant would not be allowed to wear athletic gear in the squadron. After discussing the issue with the NCO in charge, the matter appeared closed. The staff sergeants felt they had won a small victory by undermining the authority of the senior NCOs. My lessons were very clear. When your senior NCOs speak, you need to listen to them first and foremost. When the shirt mentioned that the chief had spoken on the issue, bells should have gone off. Next, my shirt had already handled the issue, told me so, and I trumped him. Not a good thing to undermine his authority in front of subordinates. As a commander, you must listen to your senior NCOs, who are central to good order and discipline within your unit. This seemingly small issue turned out to haunt me for many months until I could reorganize the orderly room. Effective team building is another key to building a successful work environment. There are certain key relationships both within and outside your squadron that you must develop as a commander. The first I will discuss is the relationship between you and your senior enlisted leader, normally a chief master sergeant. As the senior enlisted manager, your chief is the main spokesman on all issues pertaining to the enlisted force. You must talk openly and often. As a young commander, you may feel a bit intimidated by a chief with 18 to 23 years in the service. Remember, however, in the end, it is your squadron. You have several years of solid experience in the Air Force yourself, and it is what you do today with the experience you have that matters. Never forget that the leadership skills you have developed up to this point in your career, which impressed your boss enough to hire you for command, are not tribe or specialty specific. The basics of solid leadership you use to motivate and lead officers as a flight commander will now apply to leading airmen, and vice versa. Developing the right relationship with your chief is crucial to your success. Make it a point to never sign any paper associated with an enlisted issue before the chief gets a vote. Walk around the squadron with your chief so the troops see you together often. Listen to his, her advice. It will benefit you and your squadron if the troops know the chief has your ear and is a respected advisor. Think of the relationship as much like that of a father and a son. To succeed, you must be mature enough to realize that while you are often the father, sometimes you are the son. The next relationship you must develop is between your first sergeant, Shirt, and the chief. Often, the lines of responsibility between these two individuals will cross and become clouded. It is essential that you lay out your expectations early so that these key advisors are in sync and in support of your vision. As a general rule, the Shirt will be your primary advisor when you are working with a discipline or personnel issue involving other base agencies, like JAG, family support, etc. However, no action should be taken with an airman in the squadron before the chief gets an input. On the other hand, when there are mission-related issues taking place with the enlisted force, the chief will be your primary advisor. Once again, the Shirt must be in the know to ensure that he or she is not blindsided when counseling members of the squadron. It is all about communication. These two individuals must communicate openly and daily to ensure that neither works against the other and both work together for you. By laying out these expectations to them early, you will begin your tour with a solid base of senior NCO support and teamwork. The final inside the squadron key team discussed here is the one between key supervisory officers who, by nature of your mission, will have conflicting interests. I'll use a typical fighter squadron as an example to discuss the relationship between the operations officer and the maintenance officer. The operations officer is responsible for training the pilots and aircrew, while the maintenance officer is responsible for managing the fleet of aircraft and equipment. To build a healthy team spirit in these officers, who often have conflicting requirements, lay out your expectations to the two of them clearly. The operations officer has a responsibility to the maintenance officer to clearly explain the value of whatever it is he is asking for. This is important because the maintenance officer will have to explain any proposed plan to his staff. The maintenance officer owes the operations officer the cost of what he is asking in terms of workload and impact on the long-term health of the fleet. The operations officer needs to understand this cost in order to educate his staff. Once both the value and the cost are clearly understood by both sides, reasonable men and women can reach informed decisions that balance each competing interest while accomplishing the mission. The key ingredient for success is engaged interaction and open communication by both sides. When the operations officer and the maintenance officer cannot agree, you must make the decision. Before you do, bring them in and have them explain to you and to each other the value and cost as indicated above. You will likely find that a few sessions with you going through this process will help them communicate more effectively. This process can be applied to any squadron where equipment and facilities issues run counter to training agendas. It is useful to remember in these situations that each member of the squadron is after the same end state, that is, effective accomplishment of the squadron's mission. Disagreements generally center on the best method to get to this common goal. The most critical team you must develop outside your squadron is between you and your fellow squadron commanders. Make appointments in the first few weeks to visit them on their turf. Get to know the civil engineering commander before you have to ask for her help. Remember Colonel Lord's advice in his letter about viewing your fellow commanders as the competition. Do not let healthy competition turn into open animosity. As a commander, you will set the tone. Never degrade or criticize other squadrons. To do so is to violate your loyalty to fellow commanders. Remember that weak organizations need another unit, usually a better one, to define who they are and what they stand for as a squadron. Define who you are internally rather than externally. Yours may well become the squadron other units will emulate. Here is a superb story from Lieutenant Colonel Jim Jones, commander of an F-16 fighter squadron at Osan Air Base, Republic of Korea, that highlights team building, listening, and building key relationships. The time and place, June 1999, Osan Air Base, Republic of Korea. As I stood in front of the squadron during my change of command ceremony, I was confident I was as prepared to command as any officer could expect to be. I had extensive flying experience in the aircraft and had spent the previous 13 months as the operations officer of the same squadron. I felt I had the big issues under control, but I quickly learned that some of the items I considered minor issues could have major repercussions. When I took command, the maintenance personnel were operating on a three-shift concept. My maintenance supervisors were confident this was the most effective way to keep the fleet combat ready, plus it enabled them to stabilize the work schedules for personnel on the line. Instead of tying work schedules to the flying period, they were able to offer relatively stable work hours for our airmen, which was a significant quality of life issue. Sounded great in principle, but unfortunately, it was not in accordance with current regulations. As we were in the zone for a higher headquarters inspection, I had to decide whether we were going to continue with three-shift operations or realign the schedule to conform to Pacific Air Force's standard two-shift maintenance guidance. I did some basic research on the regulation and then discussed the issue with the Pacific Air Force logistics staff. They gave me a number of reasons why the three-shift operation was a bad idea: manning shortfalls, lack of supervision, tendency to pass work to the next shift, etc. While they acknowledged there were isolated situations that might require three shifts, they presented very convincing arguments that this wasn't the best way to accomplish maintenance on a routine basis. As I saw it, the issue seemed relatively simple. Could we maintain the aircraft in the same manner and accomplish the mission in accordance with the regulations, or did we truly need to maintain three-shift operations? I asked my maintenance supervisors and they indicated that we certainly could meet mission requirements with two shifts, but at a cost in efficiency and quality of life benefits. After some thought, I elected to stop the three-shift operation as a standard practice while maintaining the option to flex when circumstances dictated the need to do so. While I believe the decision was correct, and I would make the same decision today, the way I handled the situation turned out to have negative repercussions. My maintenance supervisors were extremely talented, experienced, and capable. This wasn't a decision they had come to by chance. They were confident they were doing what was best for the squadron, and when I told them I had discussed this with PACAF, they felt I didn't trust their judgment. I failed to realize how important this issue was to them. As a result, I didn't get them involved in the decision process as I should have. Rather than going to the PACAF staff alone, I should have included my maintenance supervisors in the discussion. When they wanted to discuss my rationale for going to two-shift operations, I felt I knew all of the counter-arguments, so cut off the discussion with a curt, because that is what the regs say we need to do. I should have spent more time listening and understanding my maintenance supervisor's concerns, and then included them in the final decision. The result of all of this was a perception among my senior NCOs that the boss didn't trust or value their opinion. A perceived lack of trust can lead to all sorts of problems. Had I taken the time to treat this issue as a team-building exercise rather than a solo commander decision, we could have resolved the situation and emerged stronger as a squadron. Another area you must consider as you build an environment for success is how to create a safe working environment in an inherently unsafe business. We are airmen. Our ultimate job as an Air Force is to rapidly dominate the air and space over a defined geographical area in support of national security objectives. This often involves the precise and deliberate destruction of selected enemy targets and loss of life. Nothing about the job is inherently safe. Working next to running jet engines is not safe. Deploying into high-threat areas is not safe. Securing an airfield in a high-terrorist threat condition is not safe. Dodging surface-to-air missiles is not safe. So how do you build a safe working environment under these conditions? One answer is by stressing discipline. A disciplined squadron will always be a safe squadron. However, the reverse is not necessarily true. Discipline to an aviator means strict adherence to the rules of engagement in war and to training rules in peacetime. Discipline to a maintainer means adherence to technical orders and precise documentation of work performed. A disciplined squadron will take pride in its facilities and work areas. Standards for wear of the uniform and personal appearance will be strict, understood, and supported by your supervision. Punish breaches of discipline immediately and openly. When you build your squadron safety program, focus on discipline first. Achieve it, and you will be the safest operation on base with no sacrifice in mission readiness. The last thought on building an environment for success involves developing a winning spirit, a general recognition that your squadron is up to the task despite the mission or level of competition. This is not something that happens overnight, but it can happen surprisingly quickly. A new commander at Shaw Air Force Base took over a unit that had not won a single award in the 2 years previous to his change of command. He began with his senior staff focusing on winning the quarterly Foreign Object Damage, FOD, award. Once they accomplished this task, they moved on to others, always focused on team rather than individual accomplishment. In the course of 1 year, the squadron was winning every competition on base. Morale soared as airmen recognized they were part of a winning team. It took a focused effort and diligence on the part of the commander to nurture this spirit in a way that still balanced his loyalty to both his fellow commanders and the airmen in his squadron. While building an environment for success, you will not win every competition, and you will not accomplish every task with perfection. There will be times when you will fall short, both individually and as a unit. The best advice for handling not only setbacks, but also achievement, comes from Don Shula, the winningest coach in National Football League history. Coach Shula had a 24-hour rule. He allowed himself, his coaches, and his players a maximum of 24 hours to celebrate a victory or bemoan a defeat. Once the 24 hours was up, they put it behind them and focused their energies on the next opponent. Developing your vision, communicating your vision, and building an environment for success should take up the majority of your time and energy as a commander. End chapter 2.